In this video, we're doing a deep dive into the world of soy sauce, which is one of the most used and love fermented liquids on the planet. But it's a liquid that comes with many questions. This includes, how is soy sauce actually made? Why does it make food taste so good? Why do so many countries have their own soy sauce variations? And how different is a Japanese soy sauce versus one from Korea, China, Thailand, or Taiwan? And what about low sodium versus regular soy sauce? And ultimately, what's the best soy sauce that I should use at home? Well, as someone who bought over 20 bottles and got truly lost in the sauce, smelling, sipping, and tasting all of them, I'm happy to say we'll answer those questions and many more. This isn't soy sauce 101 or 201. By the end of this video, you'll have an honorary soy sauce degree. So, where do we begin? Well, it all starts with the soybean. Quickly though, let me tell you about my favorite cookware from today's sponsor, Made In. Later in this video, I'll be doing a fried rice test where I make 5 small batches of fried rice with 5 different soy sauce, and it's all gonna be done in the carbon steel wok that I've been using for all of my stir fries, noodle dishes, and fried rices for the past 3 years. So you may wonder, why is carbon steel so great for stir fries? Well, the simple answer is it heats up super fast and is very responsive, meaning you can sear proteins and vegetables at extreme heats on all home stoves, including induction, gas, and electric. Carbon steel also seasons nicely over time, leaving you with a basically non-stick surface, and they're very light and easy to maneuver, but still very durable, as these will last you a lifetime. I'll also be using 2 carbon steel frying pans for one of the tests later too, so if you want to check out these pans, head to the link in my description, and thank you again, Made In, for sponsoring this video. But now, buckle in, grab a drink, and let's learn about soy sauce. And this was a very fun one to put together. To understand the history of soy sauce, how it's made, and why there are so many different soy sauces today, you have to understand the importance of the soybean and soy products in East Asia. As noted in the Noma Guide to Fermentation, as with almost every ancient civilization, China's early existence hinged on the domestication of nutrient-rich crops. What maize was to Mesoamerica or chickpeas to the Middle East, soybeans were to East Asia. Now, what's crazy about soybeans is that they have twice the protein of most other legumes like pinto or chickpeas, and on a per hectare basis, they can actually yield 20 times more protein than using the land for grazing cattle or growing fodder. Soybeans are also one of the few plant-based foods that contain all of the 9 essential amino acids that our bodies cannot produce on their own. Now, while it's absolutely packed with nutrition, there are a few problems when it comes to cooking and eating soybeans. First, they can develop unappealing flavors when they are cooked. Secondly, it's almost impossible to cook them soft. For example, mature soybeans have a low starch content that makes them impossible to render creamy or soft, even if you soak and cook them for a very long time. And lastly, since they are very high in fiber, they can be a little bit hard to digest, resulting in gas. Okay, so they don't taste great when cooked, and they don't have a good texture, but they are nutritionally dense. So the ancient people had to find some way to unlock the nutrition of soybeans in more enjoyable and shelf-stable ways. So they came up with 3 main solutions. Solution 1 was eating them before they mature. Like me, you may be shocked to realize that edamame are in fact just immature soybeans. Edamame means stem beans in Japanese, and when you pick the soybeans while the pod is still green, the beans inside are sweeter, more palatable, and easier to digest whether eaten raw or steamed. Also, for years I've kept edamame in my freezer as a great high protein source and never realized that these are in fact soybeans. Now, while edamame are delicious as is, things start to get a little more creative with solution number 2, which is extracting the protein by crushing the soybeans into the milk and curds. This solution leads to more products you probably know, like soy milk and tofu, whether soft, firm, or extra firm. It's really just made from the curds of those crushed soybeans. And lastly, with solution 3, the soybeans are further transformed through fermentation. Fermenting soybeans leads to many more digestible and more flavorful goods. This includes bean paste or bean curd condiments from China or Korea, or miso paste from Japanese cuisine. And in fact, the ancient salted fermented soybean paste known as jangs in China, and then later miso paste in Japan, are what led to the discovery and industrialization of soy sauce. As noted in the Noma Guide to Fermentation, the first shoyu was, in all likelihood, a happy accident. Some Chinese cooks fermenting a batch of bean paste notice a dark liquid pooling at the top of the container. They tasted it and were no doubt blown away by what they had found. Now, while soy sauce began as a liquid byproduct from a soybean paste, you may ask, why are there so many variations of soy sauce today? And you have to keep in mind, the industrialization of fermented soybean paste and soy sauces happened over 1,000+ years and in many different countries and cultures in Asia. Again from Noma, when Chinese monks brought jiangs to Japan in the 6th century, jiangs evolved into misos, and the liquid that pooled on top of miso became known as tamari. Now, what's interesting is that miso is typically made with 100% crushed soybeans. So the resulting tamari, which I've been seeing a lot more at the grocery stores recently, can actually be gluten-free, and in theory, it should taste fairly different from most other soy sauces, which are typically made with a mix of soybeans and wheat. For example, think about how coffee can be roasted and prepared in many different ways, or how a beer made with some percentage of wheat tastes completely different than an IPA that has no wheat at all. So what we're going to do is figure out just how different some of these soy sauces actually taste by doing a variety of testing. This includes a straight-up taste test, a fried rice test, a dipping sauce test, and testing on sushi, because no home cook should be expected to have 20 different bottles of soy sauce on hand depending on the recipe. Before testing, though, let's cover these two questions. One, how is modern-day soy sauce made? And secondly, what are the flavor components that make soy sauce taste so good? Because this information will allow us to start evaluating the flavor of these different soy sauces. Today, soy sauce is made in various different styles and different recipes. However, the five core ingredients are typically soybeans, wheat, koji mold, also known as aspergillus, salt, and water. Now, before we get lost in the sauce trying to explain differences between Japanese dark soy sauce, Chinese dark soy sauce, or Thai black soy sauce, let's run through the two methods that are used to transform soybeans into the liquid that is loved by billions of people around the world. At a high level, there are two methods used today to make soy sauce. First, traditionally brewed, and secondly, chemical hydrolysis. To explain the traditional brewed method, we created this graphic of how a Japanese soy sauce, or shoyu, is made from On Food and Cooking. And this is probably the most common style that you'll find at the grocery store in the US. First, the soybeans and wheat are cooked and crushed. The soybeans being soaked and steamed, and the wheat is actually roasted to develop toasty aromas. Secondly, the crushed soybeans and wheat are then mixed and inoculated with koji mold before being fermented for 3 days at 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, koji is its own complete rabbit hole. For example, in the Noma Guide to Fermentation, there is a whole chapter dedicated to explaining koji and how to make it with a different variety of ingredients and all the different ways that koji can be used. And there are actually specific strains such as Aspergillus sojae that is the preferred strain for many soy sauce factories. So you may wonder, why is koji so important? Well, as noted in On Food and Cooking, during the initial brief fermentation, the aspergillus mold produces enzymes that will break down wheat starch into sugars, wheat and soy proteins into amino acids, and seed oils into fatty acids. And these enzymes are the catalyst for creating hundreds of new aromas during the longer fermentation. To get there, after those 3 days, the soybean wheat koji is then mixed with a salt water brine that is generally 20 to 25% salt. And this soupy mixture is known as a maromi in Japan, and in the traditional way, it's actually done in giant cedar barrels. Though most of the soy sauce today is done in stainless steel kind of commercial vats, I did buy a 4-year-aged soy sauce made from these cedar barrels. We'll see shortly how it tastes. The maromi is then mixed occasionally and left to ferment anywhere from 6 to 3 years or more, where over time, those enzymes from the koji produce hundreds of unique flavor and aroma compounds, such as the roasty-smelling pyrazines and fruity-smelling esters. After fermentation, the maromi is pressed, leaving us with raw soy sauce before going through the final step of pasteurization. In this step, the raw soy sauce is pasteurized at a relatively high temperature of 180 degrees Fahrenheit, which actually creates more flavors by encouraging more browning reactions. It's then filtered or clarified for bottling and ending up at the store. And the result is a liquid that's salty, tart, sweet, savory, and it has a rich aroma. Several hundred aroma molecules have been identified in soy sauce with roasty compounds, sweet maltol, and a number of other meaty sulfur compounds among the most prominent ones. Now remember, we just walked through a typical Japanese soy sauce. The reason why there are so many different soy sauces is because there are countless variables in this process that can change from region to region and country to country. For example, one of the biggest variables might be the ratio of soybeans to wheat. Tamari, the soy sauce made from Japanese miso, or this Korean soup soy sauce are typically made with no soybeans at all, and Chinese soy sauces are said to use some amount of wheat, but it's not as much as a Japanese style shoyu, which is typically 50% wheat and 50% soybeans. Other variables can include the salinity of the brine, the length of the fermentation, and added ingredients such as sugar or aromatics. And those are just the variables for brewed soy sauce, so you can see why there are so many different styles of soy sauce from country to country. Now, 20 of these bottles were made using that more traditional brewing process, but there is one more method of brewing soy sauce that completely skips the need for that long fermentation. Starting in the 1920s, producers realized they could take chemical shortcuts to the fermentation process. First, they start with a defatted soy meal and break it down with a chemical modification process known as hydrolyzation, or adding hydrochloric acid to the mixture for 8 to 10 hours. This breaks down the mixture into those amino acids and sugars. Now, because the stuff is so acidic from adding hydrochloric acid, it has to be neutralized with sodium carbonate, same thing that baking soda is made up of. To make up for a lack of developed flavors from the skipped traditional fermentation period, this chemical soy sauce is typically flavored and colored with syrups, caramels, and salt. The ultimate result for a quick chemical soy sauce is said to have a very different character from the slow fermented version, and it's usually blended with some of the fermented soy sauce to make it more palatable. My question is though, can you actually taste the difference, and what is the magnitude of that difference? So this is where we turn to the testing, and I gathered up all 20 plus bottles and decided to just start tasting them in order to figure out what bottles were similar and what was different. Now, me sharing my observations of this first test are completely pointless unless we understand the fundamentals that make up the flavor of soy sauce, which as I started tasting the over 20 bottles, I realized just how different some of these sauces can be.
God dang. It feels the most balanced to me. It's not dominantly salty. There's a variety of things going on here. This is very interesting.
So what is the flavor of soy sauce? Well, at a high level, these six qualities make up the flavor of food: taste, aroma, texture, sight, physical, and the human element. And when it comes to evaluating the flavor of over 20 different bottles of soy sauce, we do need to understand each of these elements. And if I ask you to describe the flavor of soy sauce, the first word that pops into your head is likely salty or umami. But as noted in this chemical and sensory analysis of soy sauce, it actually has all five tastes present, which may make you wonder, how does soy sauce taste sweet, sour, or bitter? Well, let's just go through all five. As a reminder, the salty taste comes from the brine, and the final liquid in the soy sauce bottle ends up being around 15 to 17% salt, and in fact, when I put all these into a table, I found a wide range of sodium content, from as low as 290 milligrams per 15 milliliters of the Thai black soy sauce, all the way up to 1480 milligrams of sodium per 15 milliliters in the Chinese dark soy sauce. Now, you may immediately think that a soy sauce with more sodium must taste saltier, and while that may be true in many cases, as I quickly found out with the lechoy soy sauce, which is made the chemical way, that can also not be the case.
That is salty, holy smokes.
This chemical soy sauce has 70 milligrams less sodium per serving, but you could have told me it has double the amount and I would have believed it. It's dominantly salty.
God dang.
What really matters when it comes to the taste of soy sauce is how does the salt balance against the other four tastes? So after salty, umami is typically the next dominant tasting note we perceive. And the umami in soy sauce is produced from those Koji enzymes that snip proteins into several different types of amino acids and organic compounds, one of which is glutamic acid. This is the same compound found in other umami-rich foods like seafood, tomatoes, cheeses, and fish. Umami aside, as I tasted these different bottles, I realized that the sour taste, while much more subtle, is definitely important too. The sour taste in soy sauce comes from the organic acids that are produced during that long fermentation of soy sauce. For example, as noted in the Chemical and Sensory Review, one of the compounds responsible for sour taste that is found in soy sauce is lactic acid. And this lactic acid tends to be in higher concentrations in tamari, which uses all soybeans. After sour, a very subtle sweetness can be found from the wheat starches that break down into glucose, and in fact, most soy sauces have 1 to 2 grams of carbohydrates or sugars that occur naturally from the soy sauce making process. Now, 19 of these 22 bottles had less than 2 grams of sugars, and to my taste, I would say these do not taste sweet in the conventional sense at all. However, that changes with the 3 bottles at the far right of the graph. These bottles have over 2 grams at 5, 14, and 14, and these legitimately taste sweet. So much so that for the Kapha Mani and the Thai black soy sauce, I think you could literally bake with these.
Whoa. This is really like dark brown sugary molasses. Honestly, like this too. I legit think you could add these to like baking or like cookies or something, and people would have no idea that these are like some kind of soy sauce type thing.
Finally, our fifth taste is bitter. And a slight bitterness comes from the naturally occurring alcohol that is typically in the form of polyphenols. And for example, in my initial tasting, 2 of the tamari side by side was noticeably more bitter than the other.
I mean, these two even are different for sure. This is much, much stronger bitter note in this one that kind of lingers on your tongue.
Now keep in mind, while the bitterness may be noticeable if you're using a soy sauce as a garnish or a dipping sauce, this bitterness will likely cook off if used for a stir fry. How much exactly? Well, that's one of the tests we'll be doing shortly. Remember, every soy sauce will have a different taste profile, and it's an amalgamation of salty, umami, sour, bitter, and sweet. Now, taste is just one of the flavor components, and similar to coffee, it's actually the aroma of soy sauces that can add a ton of complexity. For example, here's the difference I smell between the Korean regular soy sauce versus the one specified for soup.
These smell very different too. This is like a deep, like almost a, it almost reminds me of brownies. Like brownies and alcohol. This one, I'm getting like a hint of truffle products.
So you may be wondering then, what do soy sauces smell like? Well, as noted on Food and Cooking, here are some of the aromas found in soy sauce. Quote, soy sauce is particularly rich in various volatiles. This includes alcohols, acids, esters, aldehydes, ketones, phenols, pyrazines, pyrones, and sulfur-containing compounds. And many of these have been linked to the main odor qualities of soy sauce, namely malty, caramel-like, cooked potato-like, floral, alcoholic, sour, smoky, and fruity. And in my first tasting of these, I had 2 observations. One, some soy sauces have insanely different aromas. For example, the Korean soy sauces were very different, but a couple other highlights include the Chinese soy sauces kind of had a deeper roasty quality to them. The whiskey aged soy sauce had this crazy fruity, almost bubblegum-like liquor aroma, and the 4-year age one may have been the most complex and interesting of them all. My second observation is that some soy sauces have very little aroma. The chemical soy sauce, which I mentioned earlier, was just dominantly salty, but it has no complexity and aroma. Additionally, the tamaris both had a balanced taste with a nice sour to them, but I wasn't getting much in terms of aroma. Now, when it comes to aroma, I'm able to pick up on differences when sipping them plain, but will I be able to still pick up on those differences when using them on sushi or dumplings or fried rice? Since aromas are very volatile, they can easily be changed or escape through cooking. Before we get to those tests though, let's speed run through the other 4 components of flavor. In terms of texture, soy sauce can differ in the thickness of the liquid or viscosity. Light soy sauces tend to be thin and watery, while darker soy sauces may be a bit more viscous, or in the case of sweet soy sauces with sugar added, they are heavy and syrupy. Next, we have color, and some soy sauces are very pale, while others can be almost black and can completely change the color of the dish. For example, Chinese dark soy sauce is mainly used for the color, and using just a tiny amount can give a beautiful deep brown color to anything you add it to, while light soy sauces tend to give a light brown and are more used for dialing in the seasoning. Fifth, we have physical, and this deals with the physical reaction our bodies go through. Typically, this is thinking of like a spicy pepper. And in soy sauce, the salt, umami, and sour taste will trigger salivation, making our food mouth-wateringly good. And lastly, we have the human element. And this is really a reminder that we experience food not just with our physical senses, but through our emotions, nostalgia, and cultural associations. As we learned earlier, each culture and country has their own soy sauce recipes where the key variables can be changed, such as the age of fermentation, the soybean to wheat ratio, the salt level, etc. For example, we are about to do a blind fried rice test with soy sauces from 5 different countries. And if, for example, I had someone here from Thailand, they may be biased towards the Thai soy sauce because that's what they're most familiar with in terms of taste, aroma, texture, and color. For me, I'm going to have my own biases as well. For example, in that initial tasting, I think I like soy sauces with a little bit of more sour taste to them. But I won't know until I actually do some testing, so let's do just that. So how can we evaluate the flavor of all these different soy sauces? Well, I decided to run through 3 main tests. First, a sushi test where I'll only be using soy sauce brushed on the fish. Secondly, a fried rice test where I use 5 different soy sauces. And lastly, a dumpling test where I made 3 dipping sauces with a couple of soy sauce variation. And in some of these, there was a clear favorite, and in other cases, there wasn't as much difference as I thought.
No, I got it wrong. Oh my gosh.
So let's do the sushi test.
Okay, so for this first test, I have some assorted sushi, and what I'm gonna do is run through a couple different soy sauce pairings, and I think I'm just gonna start at completely opposite ends of the spectrum to start. So this is the lochoy, which is the hydrolyzed soy protein, so like the chemical one, versus the 4-year age Japanese soy sauce. So I'm gonna spread it on these, blindfold up, spin them around, and see if I can tell which one's the same and which one's different.
For this test, I use nigiri and brushed on the soy sauce before cutting them in half and making 4 samples and picking 3 to guess from. Remember, the chemical soy sauce tastes much more salty raw, but will I be able to pick it out when fish and rice are added to the equation?
1, 3, put one away. Tasted pretty good. Like, sushi's good. That one maybe felt a little more balanced for me. Let's see when we get to number 3 though. I feel like 1 and 3, the saltiness came through a little bit more. But now that I'm rethinking through this, I wish I had like another bite of each. I'm just gonna stick with my original guess. I think 1 and 3 are the same and 2 is different. No, I got it wrong. Oh my gosh. So the 2, these were the age one. This one was the lochoy.
So I continued testing with sashimi and brushed on the kikkoman and the very unique aroma of the whiskey barrel aged soy sauce, but this time I did pick which one was the same and which one was different.
Got this right this time. Let's blindfold up, see if I can tell a difference. But after that first test, man, it's hard to do in like a single bite. Here, pretty solid. That unique aroma that I was getting. It's like salty, umami, savory still. It's just hard to pick up on that aroma that is so obvious when I'm sipping them. It's hard to pick it up once it's on the fish in a single bite. If I had to guess, I would say 1 was different and 2 and 3 were the same. Let's see. Did I say 2 and 3 were the same and 1 was different? If that's what I said, I got it right. I need to go to the tape. I don't remember what I said. So after reviewing the tape, I did say 1 was different, 2 and 3 were the same. So this was the smoked one versus the kikkoman one. And if I'm theorizing on why I guessed that, it's that this one, I think the saltiness is a little bit more prominent in this versus this feels a little bit more balanced, and I don't know if it's the aroma or kind of like how everything's balanced in there. It's just, it didn't quite taste as intense as the kikkoman. Like, me trying to guess this in a single bite is pretty tough. This one is funky, man. Like,
ultimately, I did try even more variations with the sushi, but I'm not sure that this is the best test to be doing.
Like, I can taste these and take a sip of them and say, I definitely prefer one over the other. But then when I get them onto like a piece of sushi, like this is like a spicy tuna roll, and I can sip this and say, yeah, like that tastes pretty interesting. like nice flavor, nice aroma. And then I can put some Kikkoman on this. And in the context of all the other ingredients, like it's hard to pick out singularly which soy sauce is which. But what I'm really interested in now is what happens when I start cooking these with rices and the soy sauce is spread evenly throughout the rice. Am I then able to tell a difference between them? So let's do that test right now.
For the fried rice test, I weighed out 70 gram portions of cooked jasmine rice and then paired that with equal amounts of soy sauce from 5 different countries. The Korean soup soy sauce, because I thought it smelled very interesting, the aged Japanese soy sauce, the Thai thin soy sauce, the imported Chinese soy sauce, and the hydrolysis soy sauce. And as you can see, these all have very different colors. So I added some oil to my wok and then fried and broke up the rice portions before adding the soy sauce and mixing them to combine and serving them in separate bowls.
So this is interesting already because visually, the one made with the Japanese soy sauce to me looks the best. It's nice and darkly colored, looks nice and roasty, whereas the Thai soy sauce is definitely the lightest of all of them, but I believe the Thai is the highest in terms of sodium. So while it may not look super flavorful, this may actually be the most salty tasting, but we ultimately have to taste test to find out. Shuffle these up. I don't know if I can fit these all.
So as I begin tasting these, all of them are just pretty solid fried rice.
That one's really good. Nice and like roasty quality. That is something that is you gotta nail with fried rice is like, you actually do kind of want to fry the rice and get a little browning on there. That one was good. Number 2 and 3, fairly similar for me. Let's go to number 4.
And of the first 3, nothing really stood out to me, but that changed when I got to bowl number 4.
I think this one might be my favorite of them. That kind of like roasty, deep, like it's almost like a chocolatey nuttiness really comes through. That one I would say was more similar to 2 and 3. I'm gonna go back to 1 and 4 real quick. So this was really interesting. The only one that really kind of, I think, stood out among the others was the one from Japan, the 4-year age. And what really popped out to me was this roasty, like dark chocolatey flavor that it's hard to describe, but it is very, very intoxicating. And this one looked the best, and for me, I think aroma-wise, had the best aroma. When I'm thinking about taste, though, I think the saltiness levels of the lochoy was actually probably my second favorite because none of the other ones really leapt off the page in terms of aroma, but the lochoy did have that nice saltiness to it, which I liked, but just no complexness in terms of aroma, whereas this one from Japan, that had the only aroma that really came through, and for me, I found totally, totally interesting. Yeah, you really get this like deep, roasty, chocolatey aroma that comes through. That is really, really good. That being said, all of these are successful fried rices. Like, I would have no issues eating any of these. It's really about balancing which soy sauce you are going to use and making that taste good to you.
So with test number 3, I made 3 different dipping sauces and asked myself, if we add other ingredients besides soy sauce, can you still pick up on any differences or are they going to be washed out by the aromas and tastes of some of the other ingredients? So for this, I made a dipping sauce with soy sauce, sesame oil, and mirin and used the Kikkoman, the 4-year age soy sauce, and lastly, some coconut aminos. Now, this is not soy sauce, but it's typically used as a soy sauce alternative. Of course, I cooked some potstickers to get them nice and crispy on the bottom to use for tasting.
So we've got the dipping sauce test. Again, more ingredients at play here. We have our 3 soy sauce varieties. Let's see if there are significant differences here or maybe not. Let me give these one final shake too.
When it came to sauces 1 and 2, both just taste really good. A nice amount of saltiness balanced with the sesame aroma and sweetness from the mirin.
Try to get one bite with like where the sauce kind of goes in as well. Maybe a little saltier on that one, maybe a little more sour too, I'm not sure. Let's go to number 3.
Now when it comes to the third bowl, I was definitely able to pick up on a very different taste profile.
I would say number 3 is the most different. 3 is definitely the least salty. and the most sweet, but that might be the mirin coming through. I'm assuming 3 is probably the coconut aminos. It's still good, it's just a very different profile. Number 2 and 3 are just both really good, and they taste very, just wiping the board. 3 is obviously very different, but it still tastes good. I mean, it's still good dumplings. It's just a completely different flavor profile. So let's see what 1 and 2 are here. I assume 3 has to be the coconut aminos. The coconut aminos are a very different flavor profile, but it tastes good in its own right. For me, in a dipping sauce, like, I'd rather have it with some like soy sauce, but if you were making like kind of a dipping sauce, you could add salt to this, do something with it. But yeah, for my money, these two, and I couldn't tell you which one was which. Again, the sesame oil kind of overpowers it. I really couldn't tell you which one is which here, other than the coconut aminos is definitely a very different taste profile.
So after going through this, you may be thinking, the sushi test wasn't super conclusive. The fried rice test, I had a clear favorite. And in the dipping sauce test, it showed that coconut aminos are pretty different taste-wise, but it was hard to tell a difference between the two soy sauces. So what soy sauce should I actually buy from the store? For example, is that $40 bottle worth it, or should I get a soy sauce from Thailand, China, or Korea? Well, here is my biggest takeaway after doing all of this testing. You won't make better food by simply purchasing the best soy sauce. You'll make better food by mastering the soy sauce you have. And to round out this video, I want to challenge you to an experiment that you can do at home that proves this concept. Step 1, go to the store and pick up 2 or 3 soy sauces based on any category. This could be different price points, 2 different countries, 3 different sodium levels, or the chemical versus a long aged one. Step 2 is perform the raw sip test and ask some questions. What does this taste like? Is it salty? Is it sour? Is there a bitterness? What's the aroma? Is it roasty and chocolatey? Is it alcoholic? Is it fruity? What's the color like? Is it very light like the Thai soy sauce, dark like the shoyu, or very dark like the Chinese style dark soy sauce? And what is the texture? Is it thin or thick? And lastly, do you have any human biases? For example, do you eat a lot of recipes from a specific country's soy sauce, such as Thailand, Korea, and Japan? And lastly, step 3 is make a dish and troubleshoot from a fundamental level. For example, the LaChoy soy sauce was generally pretty salty with very little aroma. So can I balance that with a little sprinkle of sugar? And then since it doesn't have a strong aroma, maybe my fresh garlic that's in the stir fry will shine even more. Or say I want some more sourness in my dipping sauce. Should I use a soy sauce with a more sour taste profile like the tamari? Or can I just add a bit of ponzu, rice wine vinegar, or citrus? If I want a deeper color on my stir fry, I've got a couple of options. I could use a single darker colored soy sauce like the Japanese one, or I could use a mix of a lighter colored soy sauce with the Chinese style dark soy sauce. Now, I will leave the table with all the different soy sauces I used and tasting notes linked down below. But remember, one of the hardest things to learn as a home cook is knowing how to balance taste, aroma, texture, and color. But using soy sauce is the perfect way to learn. In some cases, the differences in using soy sauce will be very big, and in other cases, they may be very, very small. And if you're looking for some recipes where you can experiment with soy sauce, we'll have them linked below on my new website, Cookwell, where in the ingredients, we actually call out when a soy sauce, like a dark soy sauce, is primarily used for color, such as in this Pad See Ew recipe. And remember, there are no rules in the kitchen. So you can use a Thai soy sauce for a Chinese dish, and you can use a Chinese style soy sauce for a Thai dish. But really what matters most is understanding the fundamentals of the flavor of your soy sauce so you can make the most out of it. Anyway, that will wrap it up for me in this one, and hopefully you enjoyed. This soy sauce was absolutely fascinating. I learned so much myself about different types, how it's made, and the history is really cool too. But anyway, that will wrap it up for me in this one. I will catch you all in the next one. Let us know in the comments down what deep dives you want to see for the rest of the year, and we will catch you in the next one. Peace, y'all.